Once a month, we visit with our partners at the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology for a segment we call Underground History. Chelsea Rose and Mark Tveskov of SULA bring in people and stories about archaeology and the intricate and fascinating process of literally unearthing the past. This month, the story in Underground History is SULA itself. It's celebrating a 20th anniversary. So we have a chance to talk about the many accomplishments of the lab with all three of its people. Chelsea Rose is a staff archaeologist and one of our regulars here on Underground History. Good to see you again, Chelsea.
Hi, good to be here.
Mark Tveskov is the director of SULA and another of our regulars, and we're enjoying him being back from his sabbatical in Connecticut. Good to see you back, Mark.
It's great to be back.
And Katie Johnson joins us for the first time, the other staff archaeologist in the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. Thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
So let us talk about the birth of SULA, how it got started, with whom it got started. Mark, why don't you take that part?
Yeah, so SULA began in 1998 when I got the job at Southern Oregon University as an archaeology professor. And I came here from the University of Oregon, and having been doing research in Southern Oregon already. And when I started the work, there was a lab at SOU. My predecessor, Ted Gable, had been here for a few years and had done some archaeology locally. And my idea was to take that lab and model it on some archaeology labs that I had been a part of, most specifically at the University of Oregon and at the University of Connecticut. And these were labs that did research on a local level that served local partners, local Indian tribes and agencies, and did interesting things that served their local communities and involved students in that research.
So why anthropology and not archaeology, given that a lot of what you do is archaeology?
Yeah, well, it's a broader category. Archaeology is part of the larger discipline of anthropology, and SULA does a lot of different things. We do oral history research, we do document research, we do public outreach, we don't want to limit the scope of what we could do. And so archaeology would be a little bit too limiting, although it is the core of what we do.
All right. So it's not just about the stuff. It's about people who had the stuff.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Okay. Thank you for that. I thought it was a little rudimentary myself, but, you know, we struggle with words here on the radio sometimes. So Katie and Chelsea, of the two of you, who came next?
Katie. I came to the university in 2001, actually, as a student. I spent the first 2 years here as a student of Mark's. And then I decided after growing up in the Valley that I needed to spread my wings a little bit. And I ended up transferring to Arizona State University, where I got my degree. And then in 2006, I moved back to Oregon and started working in the field of archaeology. And that's when I applied at SULA and started working for Mark pretty much full time from 2007 on.
Is there a particular period of history you tend to focus on, or a particular set of studies or civilizations you look at in your focus?
Well, I was really lucky to work with Mark. He gave me the opportunity to kind of get my hands dirty in a lot of different aspects. I focus specifically on the pre-contact era, so Native American. I do a lot of faunal studies, looking at the bones, animal bones that are recovered from sites. I do a lot of the mapping and graphics for the lab.
I'm sure when you said bones, a lot of people think, bones of humans. But no, but this is a really interesting facet of archaeology. What do you learn from animal bones that have been handled by humans?
So we're learning what they were eating specifically, how they were processing the material and preparing it, how that's different between the different cultural groups and the people that were eating the food.
So it's almost like you don't have the recipe book, but at least you get into the kitchen in a sense. You get to see the stuff they use to make their meals.
Yeah, for sure.
And what kinds of things have you learned? I mean, how big were the differences, for example, among the tribes in our region?
That's probably a question more for Mark, but a lot of the work that I've researched has been shellmans, so looking at coastal sites and all of the shell and sea mammals that they were eating, and elk and deer, and then comparing those between the sites. So obviously inland you're going to have more mammal where you don't have access to sea mammals and a shell, so that would be a difference.
And Chelsea Rose, let's turn to you now and get your story about how you ended up at SULA.
Yeah, I lived in the Valley already and was finishing grad school down at Sonoma State University, and I did my graduate work up here in the Valley, and so I came and started working with SULA a little bit, just at first kind of informally, and then I just kind of never left and kind of created, Mark had an open lab with a lot of opportunities, so I tried to take advantage of that and kind of grow, my position kind of grew over time into a dream job. So, yeah.
It really is that a dream job?
Yeah. Well, being an archaeologist, you get to go out, be outside, you get to solve mysteries, you get to do all sorts of stuff. So it is a dream job. I really, it was a dream of mine as a kid and I didn't jump on it right away. It kind of took me a while to get back to it. But I think for archaeologists, we do it as a labor of love because it's certainly not an opportunity to get rich.
So now I'm curious, so what were the things you did in the intervening years before you got back to your
oh
childhood?
Oh, boy. I hopped trains across the United States, hitchhiked across Australia, made jewelry, farmed, all those things, and realized at the end of the day that archaeology was still a big passion of mine and I could, settle down a little bit and grow up a little bit, but still kind of have adventures.
Underground history here on the Jefferson Exchange. Join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. On this month's Underground History, we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, which is our partner organization for the segment. So we get to talk about them for change instead of, we're always talking about the work they do, but it's fascinating stuff. You can join us on the Exchange, as we mentioned. And our guests, of course, Mark Tvaskov and Chelsea Rose, our regulars, and Katie Johnson, the other staff archaeologist at SULA. I want to remind you, too, while I have a pause here, that we do have Underground History Live coming up this Monday, October 29th at Common Block Brewing in Medford. So it's a 7 o'clock program that'll run till 8 o'clock. If you want to come and get yourself something to eat and drink, come at 6 o'clock if you'd like. And we'll be talking to Zach Rodriguez, an archaeologist with the Forest Service in Happy Camp. We'll be talking about how archaeologists work with people in active fire situations to preserve sensitive sites from fire and also from the impacts of the fire suppression efforts, and Mark and Chelsea will talk about some of their own projects and how those have involved fire as well. So that's Underground History Live on Monday in Medford at Common Block Brewing. The program starts at 7. You'll be able to come in and grab yourself a seat at 6 o'clock. Mark, I want to come back to what Chelsea was talking about, and Katie as well, about the mysteries that you're solving in archaeology. You come in with some suppositions, but are there some cases where you come in just really not knowing what happened in a place or who did it?
Yeah, I mean that's really the heart of a lot of good archaeology, is really challenging our assumptions about history and what we know about ourselves. And when something happens that's when it's really good, that it's not just confirming the biases that you already have. And we have numerous examples of that, like Chelsea's work in Jacksonville showing the presence of these Chinese immigrants right under the feet of the Brit Festival and things like that. And learning that a woman was in charge of a battle in the Rogue River War, that's completely missing from the history books. And yeah, so that's really the heart of what we do. I feel the need, though, to introduce the morning's first embarrassing anecdote, though.
Oh, please.
Okay. And Katie, we're really happy to have Katie as our guest here. And we kind of had to drag her in here, because if you listen to this show and you know Sewell a little bit, you know that Chelsea and I talk a lot. And we kind of like to hear ourselves talk. And Katie is just the opposite, and I just wanted to take this moment to say that SULA doesn't exist without Katie, even though she only says a little bit relative to what Chelsea and I say. However, that's not the embarrassing anecdote. The embarrassing anecdote was that when Katie was my student, that was almost 20 years ago, I taught a human evolution class, and in that class, students had to take an academic article, and present it to the class. And Katie's article selection and presentation was legendary at Southern Oregon University. And I'm wondering if she's... And it was basically the evolutionary significance of the gluteus maximus to bipedal locomotion. So her term paper was the evolution of the butt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you approach it with a sense of humor, or did you... what was the intention there?
Yeah, I think I was just looking for something fun to present on. I don't know, getting my feet wet in the field and just having a little fun with it.
And how did the class respond to your presentation?
I feel like it went over well.
Yes, I think so.
Like Mark said, it was a memorable one.
So, but what you do now is out in the field archaeology. Is this the bulk of your work?
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of field work. I feel like the majority of the work, people see us as always in the, out in the dirt and, mm-hmm. Digging. But a lot of the work is back in the lab with the analysis and the report writing and analyzing. And so that we have data to actually present in what we say. And that doesn't necessarily happen in the field. We find out a lot of information in the field, but the bulk of the work is in the lab.
So I've asked this of Chelsea and Mark many times. I'm going to ask it of you now. But, I mean, do you come back sometimes with bags or boxes full of stuff and you just don't know what it is?
Yeah. We often have a lot of stuff that we're just that just have no idea. You know, little fragments of metals, and you know, we know what the material is, but how it was used or what it was used for, it's not.
Or talk about present. The cuttlefish.
Oh, yeah, the cuttlefish. So in Jacksonville at the Chinese Quarter site, we found over 50 pounds of bone. And a lot of that bone, we just had no idea what it was. And one of our students actually was on a dig in South Africa, and she found this incomplete cuttlefish bone just in the sand, you know, where they're native to that area, and sends us a picture. I know what it is. I know what it is. We figured it out. So she was able to actually help us identify some of the material because we had cuttlefish in the assemblage.
Wow. So, yeah. That's some great synchronicity, though. I mean, and do archaeologists yeah. often help each other like that? It's like, oh, I saw your stuff, and now I know what you got.
Yeah, yeah. And that communication among different archaeologists is key to it, for sure.
Chelsea, you were starting to say something a minute ago.
Oh,
we were talking about the finding of small things and doing the work back in the lab.
Yeah, well, one of the things I was going to say that, you know, in any, like, science show, like, whether it's a crime show or whatever, there's always some genius that's kind of hidden in the lab, and the people go to them when they really need help with something. That's Katie. So a lot of times I'll come to her and be like, can you make a map that has this, but I want to throw in this, and I want to show this over time, and she just figures it all out. So she's definitely where a lot of the magic comes from. But when it comes to identification of stuff, I and many archaeologists, especially historical archaeologists, love antique stores and vintage malls, and a lot of times I'll be walking through and just looking at stuff, and you'll be like, what? That's the thing. It was a screw on a weird light or something. So you never know where you're going to have the epiphany to the mysterious artifact that's been stumping you for a while. And there's lots of email listservs and stuff where you can send out questions and crowdsource information. So, you know, if you can imagine, and this gets worse over time, things have so many different moving parts. And at some point in the future, we'll have to recognize buttons on a cell phone, you know? So there's, it's a never-ending it's a moving target, I guess. So trying to be able to identify artifacts and give them meaning is a big challenge.
Huh. So it's interesting that nobody in the operation appears to be over the age of 55, let's say.
At Sula?
Yeah.
Some of us are pushing 55.
The point being that it might help to have an older person around once in a while who could say, oh, yeah, we had these when I was a kid. I remember this.
Yeah. Well, and it's not necessarily about age, but Sula does engage our local community quite a bit. We invite people to come to our excavations. We do shows like this, and that gives us lots of dividends. You know, many of our partners, like the Southern Oregon Historical Society, Ben Truey, and just many people that we talk to, they bring that breadth of experience that allows us to create context for a lot of the things we do and things that we find.
So as the founder of Sula, has it stayed true to the mission you originally laid out, or has it altered course a bit along the way?
Saying that it had a mission right at the beginning gives me a little bit of credit for planning that. But no, but in truth, like I had excellent models. I had excellent mentors myself. Tom Connolly is the director of the ARC equivalent at the University of Oregon, and Kevin McBride at the University of Connecticut were both professors that I worked for in labs similar to Sula. And what I always admired about them was their humbleness and how they approach. And I don't know that I'm a humble person overall, but they always put the region first. They were trying to make archaeology of service to the places that they were, to the needs of the people, the indigenous people and the local people that had curiosities about their past. And they always tried to create opportunities for the people that came through the door of the lab and give them enough rope to execute the things that they wanted to do. And sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes it falls on its face. But the idea of creating a place where people can execute the things that they want to do is kind of what I had in mind. And I never could have predicted where it would go. And it's gone in many unexpected directions. But overall, I think I'm pretty proud of it.
We are talking about SULA, the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. So basically, our partner organization is the focus of this month's Underground History. Mark Tveskov, the founder and director of the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, and the staff archaeologists. Chelsea Rose, you know well, and Katie Johnson, you're meeting for the first time here on the Jefferson Exchange. Got some stories you want to swap about archaeology or some questions you want to ask of our guest? We'd love to hear from you at 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. And I have to wonder, I mean, there's certainly a level of fascination for all of you. That's clear. And I wonder if other emotions come into play, because there are things you're going to find out in the process of doing your work that happened to other human beings that they didn't want to have happen to them. Slavery, movement to reservation, death, you know, all the things that have happened to people over the years at the hands of other people through history. And your work often confirms that those things happened. And I wonder how much emotions ever enter into it. I mean, you're obviously doing the analysis, but you're humans too.
Yeah, so doing this kind of work is a big responsibility, because you are kind of given the task to try to give voice to these folks that were in terrible situations or, you know, making choices that impacted people adversely. And so one of the things that I really get inspired by is kind of the advocacy component of what we do, is being able to go back and look back at history and give voice to the voiceless, or try to, you know, give more attention to the mis- or underrepresented populations. And that's been one of the reasons why I've been really drawn to the Chinese experience in Oregon. And that's been driving a lot of my most recent research. But we're always... you know, we take this job seriously in that when we are trying to interpret sites, you have to remember these are real people. And, you know, this garbage that we're looking through is not something they thought people would be looking through someday. So sometimes it's embarrassing. But also, you know, we have a chance to tell really important stories, and we want to make sure that we hit the right tone.
I want to explain, too, that word was deliberate. I mean, often we're going through people's garbage, because you can find out a lot about people by what they throw away.
Yes. Yeah, we've found lots of stuff that people probably didn't think people would be digging through, from a pair of Molly Britt's silk stockings that we excavated out of the Britt home, to there was one place in Central Point where we found a lot of artifacts that were very personal, and kind of at first we thought it might have been a brothel, but then we realized that in fact these artifacts were not from a brothel. They were just from early misguided attempts at personal hygiene. I'll let you use your imagination.
All right, we'll let that silence settle in there for just a little bit. Speaking of, you mentioned the Brit Festival. I noticed that even when they installed new seats on the hillside in Jacksonville, they had to do some test digging. Did you find anything out there? Because this is the hillside where Peter Britt, the photographer, lived.
Yeah, so that was done by some colleagues of ours, not by us, but they didn't find much in that area, luckily. But over the years, we have found a lot on the Brit Hill, and dating to the Brit occupation and even earlier. And it's a really important site because the historic period, it was really only one family that lived there, and they did a lot of stuff and were very well documented. So we can get at some really interesting aspects of the Rogue Valley history through looking at that site.
Katie Johnson, in excavation, there's a lot of painstaking stuff that goes on. I mean, does it sometimes seem like things fight you when you're trying to get them out of the ground?
Well, fight you. I don't know, in some senses. It's definitely intricate work. You have to be careful. The context of the material is so important, what it was associated with, how it came out. So I don't know that fight you is necessarily the right word, but it's definitely, it takes a lot of pre-thought. You don't want to just go in there and dig a bunch of holes, because you want to really see how everything was associated, where it was in the house. You know, the Chinese Quarter site is a really great example of that, because we were actually able to kind of reconstruct how that house was laid out when it burned down. You know, like they were storing the food over here, they had a gaming area going on over here. And if we had just gone out with a backhoe and scooped up all that material, we would have that material, but we wouldn't have all of the information with it. And so it's not that it was fighting us necessarily, but it's just super important that you take your time and really think about how you're excavating it.
So it really is almost like a crime scene with the little tabs that indicate the numbers of the positions, because everything has a relationship to other things as well. It's not just that you, as you said, scoop it up with a backhoe and take it back and try to figure it out. The positioning is really important too.
Yeah, for sure.
Does every archaeologist have a whoops, I broke it story?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah, that definitely happens.
Mark Tveskov,
I'm trying to think. I don't have one at the tip of my tongue. Who's got what?
I remember one from grad or from my undergrad years. I was working on a ceramics assemblage. I think it came from the Galapagos, or it was a shipwreck from somewhere. And I was looking at these, you know, hundreds of year old pieces of pottery, and I dropped one and it broke. And I was so upset and worried. And I took it to the professor and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry I broke this. And he goes, oh, actually, that's really interesting because now we can look at the paste inside the piece because it was like a clean break.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that's kind of how I think of stuff now. A lot of times what we're looking at is broken, and it doesn't really, I mean, it's cool to find whole artifacts, but really, as long as you know what it is and you can kind of tell the story of the artifact, it doesn't matter. So when students break stuff in the lab and get really upset, sometimes it's just like, oh, now the count is two instead of one or whatever, you know. So
you guys have been involved in so many projects in so many different places, though. I have to believe that you've already gone after the things that you really wanted to explore. But is there still stuff on your list that you thought you might get to in a few years that you're still really desirous of doing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that yeah, I think so. And you know, I'd like to look more at the secondary effects of American colonization of Southern Oregon. Like, as part of my sabbatical was spent in Panama, and the Americans got here via Panama over the first transcontinental railroad, and those were the same people that settled Oregon. So I was like, well, maybe we'll find the same artifacts in Panama that we'd find here. That might be an interesting thing.
Oh, that's, we always tend to think in terms of the origins and destinations and not necessarily always the places in between, which can be critically important.
Yeah. And some of the soldiers that fought the Rogue River War came here over that railroad through Panama, and it was one of the eight wonders of the world or whatever, because this new mode of public transportation, and they wrote about it. And
Transcontinental Railroad of what, 55 miles or something?
Yeah, yeah, from the Atlantic to the Caribbean to the Pacific. But they all noted it because Mark Twain was on the train and he wrote a big thing about it. So I was like, how does that relate to Oregon?
So Chelsea and Katie, less than a minute. Anything you guys want to add about things you're working on next, the next big thing for you?
Well, this project that we're working on the Chinese diaspora in Oregon is getting bigger and bigger, and it's really exciting. And it does include research in China as well. So that's definitely what I'm excited about for the next couple years.
Anything for you, Katie?
I don't have anything really specific, but one of the best things about working for SULA and just working in this field is just we constantly get to learn new things. Every project we work on, it's new research and something new and exciting that we get to discover and work through. And so that's something that's really great for me.
And they always share it with us here at Underground History. So Underground History is a joint project of JPR and the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, which is 20 years old. So the SULA folks are all here together. Mark Tveskov, Chelsea Rose, and Katie Johnson, thanks for joining us on The Exchange once again.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Thank you.